Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
Okay, welcome back. We have a very special show today because last night I had an opportunity to interview Brian Miller. He's running for the U.S. Senate for Wyoming, and I think he's not, let me rephrase this. He is the best leader, and I think he has the best shot at proving to Wyoming that if they're really looking for people that are going to protect their liberties, he is the guy to go to the U.S. Senate. Now, I'm usually not on board with supporting federal positions. As you know, this is really about the state and the state government. But here's the unique thing about Mr. Miller. Mr. Miller wants to fight and he wants to help educate people in repealing the 17th Amendment. And this is where he actually can become very instrumental in invoking this type of change. And so when we talk about this, I state the obvious, you know, Brian, are you aware of the fact? Forgive me, we're on a first name basis. Anyway, Brian, are you aware of the fact that if you are out to support the dismantling of the 17th Amendment or the rescinding of it, as my article states, that there's a good chance he may not become senator again because the state legislature may have a preference for somebody else? And so he goes, I'm absolutely aware of it, but it's more important that we restore the Constitution than I maintain my retirement or any type of position in public service. If I can become a public servant to help restore liberty and restore order, that's what he wants to do. And to me, that's huge. I mean, I don't know a lot of leaders that are willing to step down to get, you know, laid off or get fired or what have you for the help of others. So when we come back, we are going to have a nice long conversation. And then after we're done with that, I'll just have a quick minute to recap. So stay tuned. Right after this one promo, we'll be right back with Mr. Miller. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
All right, folks, we have Brian Miller. And Brian Miller is from Sheridan, Wyoming. And Brian Miller is running for U.S. Senate. And I actually happen to know Brian. And as a matter of fact, I spoke to you, Brian, I think the first time it was about 2 years ago.
That's right.
And as a matter of fact, I think, were you still the chair of the county?
I had just become the chairman of the Sheridan County Republican Party.
Okay. And as a matter of fact, I think we actually had a few long conversations, right?
We did. Yep. We talked about the Republic Review and several other topics regarding the Constitution.
Right, right. And not that I'm important, but you probably had to have thought, who is this guy, you know, that's taking up this time? And, you know, it's not that you didn't maybe necessarily disagree with me, but seriously, there's this guy calling from out of state that's, you know, talking and trying to talk about the party and the election. And I was just one of those pests that wouldn't go away, I guess. But
well, not really. I'd been given a heads up that you were gonna call, and then we actually met in person. And after that, we've chatted every so often just to keep in touch.
Yeah, no, no. I'm self-effacing, if you understand. I'm not trying to be derogatory with myself, but bottom line, I know I don't take no for an answer. I used to when I was a kid, I actually did door-to-door sales. And when you get the door slammed in your face and that type of stuff, as a kid, it teaches you resilience.
It does.
So anyway, the first thing, I'm really excited because out of the people that I've been able to work with in Wyoming, and as a matter of fact, everybody in Wyoming, I think the Wyoming happens to have a breed of patriots that is just a breath of fresh air for somebody that has been living in a blue state and or blue areas for such a long time. I just love it. I mean, I love Wyomingians, if that's right, or if it's Wyomingites, or I think it's Wyomingians. And I wanted to basically, get your feeling as to why you feel compelled to run for the U.S. Senate.
Well, there's a wide myriad of reasons, but bottom line, it comes down to very simple. I've spent most of my career. I spent 20 years in the U.S. Air Force, along with 4 years at the Air Force Academy, and actually almost 23 total active duty. And that service was important to me. I even went back and taught at the Air Force Academy because I felt I owed the Air Force Academy something because I came from there. Same thing with Wyoming. I came back to Wyoming after I retired. I sat down, started getting involved with the local politics. Actually took a shot at running for U.S. Senate 6 years ago after I'd started my own business. And the same thing exists. I'm so lucky, I'll say, that I grew up in Wyoming, that I had the opportunity to know so many people across the state and to be from a place where I really wanted to go back to after I retired. And so when I came back to Wyoming, I started a business and then got involved with the local politics, realized some things. There's some interesting things going on in the 2011 timeframe, which is when I retired. And so 9 years later, I'm looking to get back to serving in a role where I think I can take what I learned while I was in the military, what I've learned in the last 9 years in private industry, and apply it for the state of Wyoming to bring us back into the fold, because I think we kind of get left behind as one of the smaller states. And I want to bring bold, innovative leadership to Wyoming. While respecting the past, of course, but really providing leadership for the future.
Well, so that you've opened a good door for me, because I can tell you that having served in the Marine Corps, and don't hold that against me, because I don't hold your Air Force service against you. having served in the Marine Corps, I understand the importance of leadership, and I understand organizational leadership, all of that. I can definitely see there is a shortage in Congress and in Washington, D.C. Throughout all three branches, there is a complete lack of leadership. It seems like everybody's just fighting over what is the most important agenda instead of actually saying this is what we need to be doing. And this, and it's not an agenda, but we need to comply to the Constitution. And I'm just so frustrated with it. It's such a lack of leadership. But having, and I don't know about your opponents, I've not looked into, their history, but
knowing you come from the military background, there's no doubt in my mind you understand leadership, good leadership principles, and what it takes to be a successful leader.
That is true.
And so, good.
And not only have I, you know, gone through the Air Force Academy, which the Academy likes to claim that they are the premier leadership school in the nation, I've had the opportunity to serve at all levels, to serve, you know, being a follower, being a mid-level leader, and then being a senior leader in different organizations.
Okay, so it's a breath of fresh air that a real leader is standing up. And I know that there's all sorts, and I see all the time, there are all sorts of former military people going into service. The problem I have with the majority of them, Marine generals or what have you, it doesn't matter. If you have no appreciation for supporting and defending the Constitution, and you're only there to help move an agenda so that you can get, you know, put your butt in front of a plate of power so that you can, reap the rewards from doing what you're told by supporting an agenda, because that seems like the cesspool or the swamp that is just common, not just in D.C., but in almost every state house. And somebody willing to walk in and actually trying to do the right thing and saying, you know, this, because, and a good example of that, because a lot of people give credit to Rand Paul, right?
Right.
And I think Rand Paul, I don't know if you've reached out to him, but you probably would want to, because I think you're coming down a path that would be aligned with him. And I bet you anything, if you did a poll in Wyoming, out of all the senators that Wyoming, you know, the Wyomingians admire, which one would it be? And if you put up all the different names or gave them a list of nine, now, heavens forbid they wouldn't select a Wyoming senator, but don't put that up there, but give them a selection and then ask why. I'll bet you Rand Paul would probably be the most admired senator through the majority of all Wyomingians. And so having a campaign or having a perspective and a paradigm that aligns a lot with him, getting the federal government into the alliance or into alignment with the Constitution, I'll bet you he would probably come out and help you.
You know, it'd be interesting to see. I know one of my opponents, anyway, has been in the House in the past, and she's reached out to all of her old friends, and is kind of banking on that old friendship to be what gets her in, that gets people to go, oh my gosh, look who is who's supporting her, all these famous names from back when,
right.
I look at that and that bothers me, because it seems like it's the good old boy system.
Sure.
And that has been a problem in Wyoming in the past. One of the reasons I got involved in Wyoming politics was to break that down. It's gotten very old and stale to have the same people going back to Washington, D.C. that have been back there for eons, who end up doing the same thing they do every time they get reelected to go back.
Yep.
And then we always want to expect something different. I know everybody always likes their own senators. Mm-hmm. I get that. And that's why you get elected.
I hate ours. Well, because they're liberals. They trample on the Constitution left and right.
Well, that's one of my biggest issues. Is that the Constitution across the board, you know, for more than several decades now, the First, Second, Fourth, and Tenth Amendments have all been being trashed across the board.
Yeah.
And now we're starting to see others that are being impacted.
Right.
This whole COVID pandemic situation is really allowing us, especially here in Wyoming, to see who is really willing to stand up for the Constitution and for people's rights,
right,
versus falling into a fear type modality where they're worried about, well, pretty much everything, you know,
right.
Fear of the press, fear of everybody, fear of messing up. And they just won't make a decision. Or when they make a decision, they make it, they get feedback, and they go, well, I'm sticking with it regardless, even though They might be being told, well, you're stepping on people's rights here. Why are you going this route?
Right, right.
And well, they just double down.
So
doing the right thing.
With all due respect, I want to get into the current events, but I don't want to. I don't want to abandon the difference in leadership and the difference from standing up and doing the right thing for the Constitution. And so I would venture to say that that opponent that is using the good old boy system to come and give me an endorsement, I would probably venture to say that every single one of those people are not champions for the Constitution. And I would even probably say that not one of them has stood up and said, what this COVID-19, just to associate this with the current events that you just led us into, I would venture to say that not one of those people that they would be willing to bring in and who are endorsing this, your opponent, would look at the trampling of our constitutional rights as anything but a necessity, that they needed to do this, and, you know, full speed ahead, damn the torpedoes. And I'm going, are you kidding me? And I'll bet you anything, if you really look and you did the research on them, there's very few. I think you'd probably find maybe Ted Cruz. I don't know. I haven't been following him. But I would think that Rand Paul is one person who's kind of consistent with saying, you know, we're trampling on the Constitution. Because I know his father, Ron Paul, was very vocal about, you know, not shutting down businesses and not to basically declare martial law. So anyway, there is that perception that this is a well-perceived image because these people are supposedly quote-unquote winners because they've been elected, but they're not really winners. They are supporting agendas because bottom line, they've sold, 9 times out of 10, most politicians sell their souls.
And that's what I've noticed. And that really bothers me. One of the ways that I've had people ask me, you know, you're going to get back there. You're going to have all these lobbyists coming and talking to you. You know, how are you going to be different from everybody else when it comes to lobbyists doing their bidding? I've told them, well, the first thing I would do is if you're a lobbyist from Wyoming who's part of my constituency, yeah, you can come see me in Washington, D.C. But, you know, if you're a lobbyist from somewhere else, my goal would be to make them come to Wyoming. I mean, if they're really that interested in trying to change my mind to get me to do something that they want done, they can come to Wyoming and see how it's going to impact the people who I represent. And they can bring a little money here, do whatever they do to stay in the hotels and come out and see it. But that's something that I've said that I've had several legislators, even some of our current legislators say, wow, you know, that's pretty bold. I don't know if you'll be able to accomplish that.
Well, let me fine tune that a little bit.
Okay.
Because what is a senator? Who does the senator really represent? I mean, based on the 17th Amendment, the senator is supposedly representing, even though I'll have to correct myself, because truly the first thing every public servant does is they raise their arm to the square and they take an oath, and their first constituent is the Constitution. It's not mom and dad and everybody else. So the question I have is that who's the senator truly supposed to represent, the people or whom?
Well, under the Constitution, they're supposed to be representing the state.
That's right.
The 17th Amendment kind of changed that. Well, it didn't kind of. It did change that. And I don't want to say it changed what they were supposed to do. It didn't change the actual role of the senator. All it changed was the way they get to that position. And unfortunately, the way I see it, what it has done is it's had a very negative impact in that it's kind of created a super representative rather than an independent U.S. senator who's representing the state. And when you look at the way our republic's set up, the nation is made of states, the states are made of counties, the counties are made of municipalities, and the municipalities and the counties are made of people.
Right.
And people lose sight of that. They don't get that we have 50 independent and sovereign states that have agreed to come together to work primarily for economic and security reasons under the Constitution.
Right. So fine-tuning that, what you just said, as far as when the lobbyists approach you, and before you'll even listen to them, you're going to just say, go to Wyoming. I would tell them, go talk to my constituents in the state legislature.
Absolutely.
Go talk to the House. Go talk to the Senate. What they think needs to happen. Because if you really, because the you're right. The Constitution only changed how senators came to be, but it did not change your responsibility to be beholden to the state legislatures, because you're supposed to be protecting the interest of the state sovereignty, not making sure that a trove of money and welfare is being pumped out to the people.
And that is one of the biggest things I can say that's a difference between myself and any of the other candidates who are out there. I listened. I went down to our legislature for about a third of the session. I was down there this year, and I was fortunate enough to hear our outgoing senator get up and speak to both the House and the Senate. I was fortunate to hear him, and I was fortunate to hear him because I heard exactly what he said, and it bothered me tremendously. Because the first thing he said in each case, he got up and said, you know, I would never get involved in Wyoming politics back here. I would never step in and try to be involved in what you're doing back here, because, you know, I'm dealing with what's going on in D.C. and I know you have things well in hand and you're good to go. And I thought, wow, that has nothing to do with the role of a senator. They should be engaged with our legislature. They should be engaged with our governor back here in the state.
Right.
That really set in my mind that I'm the right one out of this group who's running to be in Washington, D.C. to help get us back to those roles.
No doubt in my mind. And as a matter of fact, I would probably go one step further. If you actually sent a survey to your state Senate and your state House, to every member, and ask them, how well do you feel are, you know, the current senators that represent you, how well do you feel they've been listening and looking for, you know, coming to you, what do you need? How can we help you, the state of Wyoming, the state legislatures of Wyoming, how can we help you? And I'll bet you anything, they would say, that's never happened. Are you kidding me? Why would they do that?
I wouldn't doubt that. We're running, they don't like to call it a deficit here. They like to call it a shortfall. We're running almost a $1 billion shortfall in Wyoming every biennium. And that seems to be the only thing that there's any communication about. And that's typically having to do with taxes on coal and other resources that are taken to the federal government. And then parsed back to the state in a much smaller amount than went to D.C.
Let me just say this, and I'm just going to say this because it's official and it's out on the air. But I will tell you that Wyoming has so many incredible resources. The people, I will tell you that 99.9% of people who are really smart on understanding resources do not understand how Wyoming could become one of the richest states in the Republic. And, or let me just say this, not just the richest state, but probably the state that could be integral in saving the Republic. And I'm not talking politically. I'm talking economically. And so, but that, to get into that, we would have to definitely do a sidebar. This would not be for public, and I would need a non-disclosure agreement and all that type of stuff. Because I'm not a guy that's about money. I'm all about trying to solve problems. Right. And so moving into the concept of, you know, representing the states, and I know you've read my article regarding the 17th Amendment.
Yeah.
I would like to actually dive into that. Before we do, let's talk about the current events, because you actually brought up the COVID-19. And we talked a little bit about the opponents. And I'll bet you anything, those people that are coming to endorse that opponent probably felt it was legitimate, it was justified to shut people down and to strip them of their liberties and violate the Constitution. And so I truly believe that the people of Wyoming feel differently.
And I would have to agree with you. And I see it just on the streets here in Sheridan. People are out there, and businesses are opening as much as they feel they can without getting in trouble. But people are out, and they understand that personal responsibility is important. They understand that if they're sick, they don't come out. And fortunately, unfortunately, Sheridan was actually the first city in the state to have a case of COVID, but we haven't had one in 30 days. We're more than ready to get back to business. As a matter of fact, we should never have shut down business.
Right.
I've got a whole lot of writings that I've put out there and trying to get the governor and others to get back to business.
Right. So let's, since we're talking about writings, I know you read my article. Mm-hmm. Regarding martial law in the 21st century. And we talk about how the federal government and the state governments do not have any constitutional standing to be able to suspend any constitutional rights because the militia has been shut down. There's no such thing as a militia anymore. And there's this facade that people tell us, well, that is the militia, but it's not. The National Guard is not the militia. But that being said, I proposed in that article that there is a reasonable process that the government, state governments, could exercise by, quarantining and basically kind of, okay, if you've been exposed to this person, then you need to self-quarantine just in case you come down, just like what Cruz did, what other people have done. So that if you've had contact with somebody that becomes positive or actually gets sick and exhibits and is suffering from the symptoms, everybody that has been in contact, you want to kind of, hunker in place. But you don't shut everybody else down. My point is we only have to shut down those people who pose harm to the public.
That's exactly right. It's interesting because, I've gone and researched what our state has been using under Wyoming statute to say that they can shut down movie theaters and that they can close businesses at public buildings, things like that. And I find it interesting that just in the Wyoming Constitution, not even the U.S. Constitution, just in the Wyoming Constitution, those statutes conflict heavily with about, I think it's 7 of the Article 1 paragraphs. It's amazing to me that we can ignore the Constitution and the rights of individuals and the rights of businesses, for that matter, pardon me, and write a law or put into place something that goes against the Constitution without the ability of the people, although it does say also in the Wyoming Constitution that we can sue our own legislature, we never end up having the standing. Matter of fact, we tried to get that pushed through, not this last session, but the session before, where anyone, any citizen in Wyoming can actually have standing to sue the legislature for bill they write or any legislation they put forward that goes against the Wyoming or the U.S. Constitution. And that didn't pass.
Wow.
I was shocked in Wyoming that did not pass.
So, well, let me ask the question. What harm does a movie theater have all of a sudden? What harm does a nail salon have all of a sudden? What harm does any business have all of a sudden to the public? In other words, why were they shut down? Were they potentially going to cause harm? No. It's the person who's infected that causes harm. So why every single business in Wyoming should all do a class action lawsuit against the governor and those who supported, everybody that supported the shutting down of their businesses, and sue them for lost income.
I think that, that would have been the better way to go than to have the federal government throw out $2 trillion in the first round to try to resolve the problem.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a myriad of things that we could have done differently from
right.
the get-go that would have made the financial piece different, much less the public health piece.
Right.
As you read through their the arguments they have in the orders here in Wyoming, they specifically break out the fact that, and they say the source is the theater, the source is the barbershops and all that. And you're right, that's not true. That is not the source. As a matter of fact, a strict reading of the state statute would probably point out that the source is the individual, and it's not a business or a building.
Right.
I think they would lose if we end up taking this to court.
Absolutely. And as a matter of fact, if you look at this in standard law, because I like using the bald tire scenario. If you have a law that basically says if you have a disease, you don't know it, and so you can't be held accountable because you don't know you've got the disease. But if all of a sudden symptoms are beginning to show and you all of a sudden think, oh, shoot, I might have the flu, then there's a law that says if you are sick and or you could be sick, and how could you be sick if you have been in contact, direct contact with somebody that has been sick? In other words, they didn't know, so you have been cross-contaminated. So there should be a law that would require you to either be tested or self-quarantined until, such a time that you're safe to go out and not cause harm to anybody else. Now, if that person with a bald tire doesn't know they've got a bald tire, and then somebody says, hey, you have a bald tire, you can't be driving on the street with bald tires. Well, I can't afford to get new tires, so I continue to drive. Okay, well, if you get pulled over, you get a ticket and you get a safety violation. Well, that's just a slap on the wrist because that's not a big deal, right? But if you're driving along and it's raining and all of a sudden, because you've got a bald tire or all your tires are bald, whatever, and you're driving an unsafe vehicle and you can't stop, or because the bald tire causes an accident and somebody dies or is harmed or there's any property damage, you should be able to be sued. And as a matter of fact, I've always loved this concept that insurance companies should be able to be waived completely and exonerated from responsibilities of anybody who has done something with bad behavior. And I'll give you a good case in point. If you're driving a car and your car has built-in safety systems such as a safety belt, and you choose not to drive the car with your seatbelt on, and you get in an accident and your injuries are just astronomical, and I believe that the insurance company should not be responsible for the injuries you sustained because you weren't wearing the appropriate safety.
Yep.
Instead of making the insurance companies pay for everything. And see, this goes back to what you said, where the federal government has been throwing out trillions of dollars. What they're doing is they're removing the consequences of bad behavior. And if you listen to my show, I talk a lot about this, because if you look at what they're doing with venereal disease or pregnancies or smoking, giving you free health care for smoking or liver damage from drinking, all they're doing is they're trying to remove the consequences of that bad behavior.
It's very true.
And if you look at it, what it is it's basically nullifying the consequences of sin It's a pretty evil process when you really start examining it, because that's not government's job, is to nullify the consequences of sin. It's government's job is to protect life and to protect property, and not to enable bad behavior and say, that's okay, go ahead and smoke away, we'll give you free health care.
That's exactly right. or it's okay to smoke marijuana, just you can't smoke regular cigarettes. You know, that made no sense to me under the last administration.
Yeah. So,
well, here's one of those things that shows a dichotomy in the thought processes.
Yes.
In the orders that have come out in Wyoming, there's a particular line in there. It's paragraph 8 in this particular one. They're not always the same paragraph. It says, a large number of persons with serious infections may compromise the ability of healthcare systems in Wyoming to deliver the necessary healthcare to the public. Yet, at the same time, they've shut down a vast majority of the necessary health care to the public, i.e., folks have, everything is now done, but I won't say everything, but a lot of things are done by phone. You can't go in and have somebody seen. To get in now, it's an hour between appointments, so you're slowing down the number of people who can go in. Cancer doesn't care. You know, a week or 10 days can make a huge difference and whether cancer is going to take you, no different than COVID.
Right.
And it's those types of dichotomies that I see as I look through here that I go, wait a minute, you're saying this on one thing, but on the other side, you're stopping the ability of people to go see the healthcare professionals.
Right.
It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, so I kind of have a different view regarding the viruses and all of that anyway, because having a mother that had, a lung disease, if she got just a common cold, it would kill her. And so I really had to go out of my way, and I had to tell people, stay away from me. If you're sick, if your kids are sick, if you've been exposed to any germs, don't even come close to me. Because what you're doing is you're putting me at risk, because I could unknowingly expose my mother and that could kill her, because her lungs, she would get pneumonia and she'd end up dying. It would have shortened. I mean, she was going to die anyway. And she ended up, fortunately, dying from the disease. Actually, she didn't die from the disease. She had a heart attack. She wanted to go on her own terms, and she wanted to have a heart attack. So that's how honorary Mobleys are. But because she didn't want to die, just laying in bed, struggling to get the next breath, because it was getting harder and harder for her to get her oxygen, and so it was really tough on her. But I would have loved to have had a law that said, hey, if you knowing that you're carrying a disease, a virus that could kill somebody, and you don't tell that person, it's just like, AIDS. I think there's still laws that if you have AIDS and, you don't tell somebody, you don't even have to have sex with them. I mean, just like in sports and what have you, you become a risk.
There are plenty of laws on the books regarding police officers and things like that when people intentionally, spit or cut or bleed on officers for the same type of reason.
Right, right. Great. And if we actually looked at it in that pragmatic perspective, then we wouldn't have destroyed businesses. What I truly believe, the intent behind this had nothing to do with health. It had everything to do with creating a bigger divide between the upper class and the middle class, because the people who hurt the most from this are the middle class, who basically have either depleted their savings and or, have been put into a position where they're, they've lost everything, or, they can't come out of this. There's a lot of people that are in that boat.
There are. Yep, there's a lot of them here in Sheridan.
Yeah, and fortunately, believe it or not, people don't realize Wyoming actually still has a lot more liberties than, these blue states that did the full lockdown.
That is true. Yep. Yeah. So yeah, when I'm out arguing that we need to get back to business, some folks look at me and say that. They say, well, wait a minute. We're not completely locked down. Well, just because you've been given that little extra taste of freedom doesn't mean you actually have it.
Right.
Because you still can't go out and get what you need. You still can't go out and support your family.
Yeah, so
you become dependent upon the government. So it cuts both ways.
It does.
You can not do anything, and you can have big problems, and all, you know, it could go bad, it could go south quickly, or you could do exactly what you talked about earlier, where the folks who are sick are the ones that are quarantined to where they can end up getting better, so they can end up being good members of society, or come back to participate in society.
Right.
But to come back and participate in society once they're healed up. And if those of us who are well, if we're out there and we're able to, you know, continue working, continue paying taxes and everything else that's going on, keeping the economy up, we'll be better able to take care of the sick.
Right. So just to share, yeah. So just to share this with you, there are groups out there that are called health freedom organizations, and there are people within those health freedom organizations that are probably on this line of anarchists, because they don't want any restrictions. You know, we want complete health freedom, and if, you know, if we're sick and we need to go to work, we should be able to go to work. And I mean, I'm just going, are you kidding me? In my perspective, as I look at and in dealing with people like that, I just go, you know, because I presented this idea early in March that, you know, why aren't states writing a law that makes it illegal so that if you go out and you get somebody sick, you're going to be held liable. You'll be fined or what have you. And if you're caught being sick, being out in public, and you can't stay home, then they'll take you to a hospital so that you can get, you know, treatment until you are better. Now, it may not be the top, you know, top-notch hospital, but you're going to have a bed, and they're going to make sure that before you get out in public to harm somebody, you're going to be better. By doing something like that, it keeps every business open, except for the, you know, that one business guy that gets sick. The people that ask you that this isn't that bad, you know, we're not completely locked down, I would ask that person, do you not know people that have been affected, that have lost their business and have lost their livelihood because government decided to do this? And if you happen to know those people, can you show them where the government has the authority to actually shut down commerce because of a virus? Is it in the Constitution? And bottom line, there is no authority given to government to be able to do this, other than if it is truly a threat to where they declare martial law. And that's why that article is really important. And I hope you enjoyed it. And I hope everybody who hasn't read it reads it. Anyway, what I wanted to do was I also wanted to talk about, because I know you've read a few of my other articles, right?
Sure.
And What do you think about what is the real problem?
What is the real problem?
So I put it into perspective. In that particular article, I'm talking about guns and gun control and so forth. And I kind of, this is where I talk about the framers had this perspective of having a self-citizenry enforcing and the militia being integral in enforcing the laws.
You bet. Yeah, and this is where, you know, I come across this too, and I've had this with the party in Wyoming, the Republican Party in Wyoming, especially on the conservative side. For years, we would argue amongst ourselves. Basically, we've always had the numbers, but we would argue amongst ourselves, and we'd run two different people against one person who wasn't quite as conservative as the rest of us, and they would win because we would split our vote. And it was because we were stuck on the smaller picture, the individual things that pester us, that are really symptoms of the actual problem. And what it comes down to is having people who are in office, who make the laws, who execute the laws. They need to follow the Constitution in order to avoid any of those other things becoming issues.
And I think the best check on any laws that they can write would be making it so that if it gets, gathering my thoughts, if it came down to that law being enforced by the militia, the question would be, would this really, because now all of a sudden you're no longer being scrutinized by the people in the legislative room with you, or in the committee where you're really talking about this, because this is where you really dive into it. Because when you get into the body of the whole, all of a sudden, you know, you're in a big pool. Everybody's looking at all the different bills they've got to vote on, and nobody's really examining it. Sometimes they do, but a lot of times they don't, because the committee just comes out of the committee really strong and everybody's wink, 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 nudge, nudge, that type of thing. But the point is that how well would those legislators be scored if all of a sudden the citizenry basically said, we're not enforcing this law because it's unconstitutional?
That's exactly right. And how would they enforce it? I think that's what you're getting at here. Is there's, you know, the U.S. military, and of which both of us, you know, were a part of, is not an enforcer within our nation.
Right.
Title 10 is not the same as Title 14 as the National Guard is, but even the National Guard isn't the same.
Right. That is correct. And the brilliance that the framers had in creating the militia and the system that they did, I think it just baffles everybody when they really realize that, wow, why did they do that? I mean, that's stupid. When people, you know, when they first look at it at face value, from going from the progressive education system, and they, hey, the militia's supposed to enforce everything, they'd go, are you kidding me? That's why wouldn't we want to have professionals? And they don't realize. Yeah, they don't realize that the professionals are those people who don't care about your freedoms and your liberty. They're just there to do a job. They're basically mercenaries. And, you know, I think in the article, the way I painted it, if you absolutely look at every single federal enforcement agency, that's a standing army.
Yeah, I've been rather surprised at how many DHS personnel, Department of Homeland Security personnel, are running around Wyoming in cars marked police and on government property, you know, BLM, all kinds of folks with weapons that kind of surprised me at times.
Yeah, I don't understand why, because that actually happened in Iraq. I'm not sure if you knew that, but in Iraq, I don't know if it was the first war or the second war, probably both. The Army started putting, there were some units in the Army that were putting the United States Marine Corps on the sides of their vehicles because the Marines weren't getting attacked. They weren't being directly attacked because they knew the Marines had to, you know, would stop and they'd just engage and fight. But the Army would have to go through the politics of, you know, can we engage? What do we have to do? I mean, the Marines just reacted where, you know, the Army had much tighter controls. And so they couldn't be as responsive. And that's how the leadership was, because they were managing an agenda. And the Marines, they're just out to do a job. And if, you know, they're taught how to react and how to engage and do whatever's necessary for success. And so anyway, my point is that they, you know, were creating a facade just so they wouldn't get attacked. And now the DHS and others, you know, they use those same kind of tactics because now they don't want to necessarily get, you know, question on the fact that, are they an authority? Well, they're in a car of authority.
Sirens.
Hey, Mr. Miller, we're at that magic point of 40 minutes. What I'd like to do is I'd like to take a break, and we'll do another segment right after this so I can air this on the following day. Do you have some more time that I can suck your valuable resources out of you, maybe another 40 minutes or so?
You bet.
All right, folks, we will be right back after these two promos. I will close out, and we will have Mr. Miller, who's running for U.S. Senate, in our next episode. So please stay tuned. We'll be right back after this. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires two-thirds of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
Okay, so if you can recognize how different Brian Miller's paradigm is, the fact of the matter is here you're looking at a candidate who is willing to do the right thing instead of working for lobbyists, instead of working for, you know, a golden parachute like Fine Swine and the rest of them who have only gone into government service to benefit themselves, and that's how they've become multimillionaires. Fact of the matter is, if you really want to start making changes, we have to start looking at constitutional candidates who are looking to restore, preserve, and actually serve the Constitution. As I say, the first thing you do is you take an oath to the Constitution. Your primary constituent is not we the people. Your primary constituent is the Constitution. You're supposed to be supporting it, defending it. And as you know, in Wyoming, they're not only supposed to support and defend, but obey the Constitution as well. So it's a breath of fresh air getting people like this. And if you really want to start contributing to campaigns that will actually make a difference, here is one. And we're going to be giving you others in Spokane. We're going to give you others in Wyoming and other states that are actually, you know, people who are committed to supporting the Constitution. This is why I've been asking you to put money aside, maybe a gallon a week, save, you know, whatever you pay on a gallon, just $5 or whatever. Now you can start throwing that money out and using that to actually affect change. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. And don't forget, we'll be back with another episode in our next episode with Brian. I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution.